Welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. This is your host, Rav. Thank you so much for being here. Wherever you are in the world, thank you for tuning in. Recording this on a quieter few days, I guess, for Arsenal. Recording this Monday morning here in Australia. I imagine it's the weekend still for most of my listeners. So hope you're enjoying or winding down as your weekend comes to an end. It's been a strange few days on the Arsenal front, of course. Pretty much like it has been this last month or two, right? We've had such an unrelenting schedule pretty much from mid-late December onwards all the way through to the end of January. And it wasn't just the fact that there was a match every 3 or 4 days. There was obviously a lot of emotional weight that came with it, you know, from dating back to before Christmas, Saka's injury. And then, of course, we suffered the ACL injury in the second week of January for Jesus. Lots of ups and downs in the transfer market rumours. You heard the manager being as openly honest as I've ever seen him when it comes to talking about transfers or pending incoming transfers. And it was just, yeah, it's been a very emotional time. And then we come out the other end. And of course, we all know, we don't need to go through it all again, right? We all know we weren't active in January and we pinned our slim hopes on keeping the players we currently have fit. And next match, of course, the very next match after the window, Martinelli with a significant hamstring injury. Again, as we bowed out to Newcastle and then Havertz soon after unfortunately, almost the cursed words from Arteta when he referred to him as a genetic powerhouse. And look, here we are at the other end of it with almost, there was a sense of relief from me that we didn't play this weekend in the FA Cup. And please don't get me wrong, I want Arsenal to win. I want Arsenal to compete in every challenge for every competition, go as deep as possible and challenge on multiple fronts. But we just don't have the squad. We just don't have the momentum. We don't have the energy levels at the club right now to be able to, as stretched thin as we are, I shudder a little bit to think how Arsenal would have fared if we were drawn this weekend against, say one of the Premier League teams. You know, there's a number of good teams still in the competition. You know, Fulham got one over Manchester United this morning. I haven't seen any highlights, or I haven't watched any of the games. I tend to only focus on Arsenal, given other life commitments and responsibilities. So I've only just seen the scores in passing when I checked early this morning. But, you know, there's still some big teams, you know, Bournemouth, Manchester City. Like, there's no easy fixture, right? And I just don't... We saw how much we've struggled the last two matches against West Ham and Forest on Thursday morning here. It's just... We're just struggling to score. And it's... We're all trying to scratch our heads, trying to figure out the answers. Arteta is. He's through the kitchen sink in the second half at Forest. And we just can't unpick the lock. So again, as much as I'd prefer to be still competing in the FA Cup, it wouldn't have been pretty. It's not going to be pretty viewing pretty much every match now up until we get some key players back. I think Martinelli is ahead of Saka in the recovery schedule, so to speak, but that's still about a month away. So it's just not... We're stretched very thin. We are working players. They've had a very, very heavy load. You see how it's impacted them. We all know who we're talking about. Odegaard, Rice, Trossard. We're just not having the same impact and output from them, unfortunately. And look, it was probably a bit of a welcome relief that we didn't play on the weekend. And of course, just now that we're talking about the FA Cup, the circumstances of which we exited the FA Cup. I mean, if you ever wanted to encapsulate Arsenal's season, we even when we lose, we don't just have a straightforward exit, do we, right? It went all the way into extra time, all the way into penalties. And such a, look, again, just going back to that emotional impact, that was the match that we lost Jesus to the ACL. He's going to keep him out for the season and well into next season. Kai Havertz, unfortunately, had a very difficult day. He missed a number of gilt-edged chances. Odegaard missed a penalty. Of course, you know, we exhaust ourselves in 120 minutes and exit on penalties. I mean, like, just even our losses aren't just straightforward. And you have to say that the ramifications of that, I'm not trying to be too simplistic here, but when you look at certain turning points in a season, because there are many turning points in a season, favourable or unfavourable. And as dicey as the situation was for in Arsenal already, that particular match, especially when it's compounded with the catastrophic injury to Jesus, he'd just come back into form. We saw some horrendous abuse aimed at Havertz and his wife afterwards. In fact, that was one of the things that propelled me to start this podcast, because I just felt so helpless, and just watching this on from afar and just how much the club is trying, how close we are to, you know, lifting major trophies that we all want, right? We're all Arsenal fans. We want us to win and succeed. And that was one of the things that propelled me to just, you know, finally sign up to a podcast hosting platform, get a microphone, start recording and start publishing. So it was just a very, very difficult day and moment for the club, and the ramifications I still feel we experience now, because I don't think Havertz was already unwell. Him and Odegaard, they were already unwell from memory. And please correct me if I've got this wrong. Sometimes the weeks and everything just gets blended up in my head. Sometimes I'm sorry. I do believe that he and Odegaard were battling illness. There was a bug going around the club and probably much of London at the time, of course. It's deep into winter, early January. And all intents and purposes, he shouldn't have played. Odegaard shouldn't have played. Had we made wiser choices in the transfer market last summer, of course, there are so many consequences to our failures then, that had we had some depth in these positions, perhaps we could have sat them out. Maybe they don't start, depending on the match situation. Are they okay to play 15, 20 minutes off the bench? But no, we had to exhaust them for 120 minutes. I don't believe they were training as much as training was even possible, given our hefty schedule. We were playing every 3 days. So I think active recovery was more a priority than actual genuine training sessions in between our matches. So sorry to waft on this point. I'm just trying to say that had a number of other things been done to protect ourselves from these patches and protect the players, take them out of the firing line, utilize squad depth. For example, if we had that other additional forward that we're all craving, you sit Havertz out for this one. Perhaps can he timeshare 60, 30 minutes in midfield with someone like Rice? Did we need to go in with just one attacking midfielder in Odegaard this season? Of course we didn't. We exited four attackers last season: Nketiah, Vieira, Nelson, Smith Rowe, right? And that's all fine, right? They all had their circumstances, their desires to leave, and we got excellent funds incoming for them. I'm not questioning those exits. What I'm saying is we didn't then adequately strengthen that area of the squad, right? Had we had someone else to call upon, perhaps Ethan could have started in that position on the match. So one by one, the more and more I unpack where this season fell apart, it of course all originates, the root causes are all in the summer choices last year. And we have very tangible, very palpable moments where it slaps you in the face. And that Manchester United fixture, unfortunately, is the point I feel our season got derailed. And there's only so much you can do to try and repair it from there. Even if we did strengthen in January, which was another catastrophic mistake, right, you still can't undo the damage that we'd already experienced by then. We could have protected our floor to ensure that we don't spiral out of control. I know there's a bit of fear amongst the Arsenal fan base about, are we in a top four battle now or a top five? I think top five will get Champions League this season. Look, I for one don't subscribe to that theory. I still feel our position is safe. I think at worst we may slip down to third, depending if Forest or City go on a run. But of course, you know, the very fact that we're even talking about these scenarios, when not too long ago we were talking about winning the Premier League, right? It's just really disappointing. And I think we all know that, right? This is unacceptable where we find ourselves. And the mood and the energy at the club has really suffered since. You can just feel it. I saw such a stark difference in the effort against West Ham compared to Forest. And look, this is little solace for many, because we've come out of those two fixtures with 1 point. Liverpool have charged ahead. We failed to score in back-to-back Premier League matches for the first time in a long time. And look, this doesn't do much for anyone right now, yeah? And I totally understand. I totally understand that. We all have our coping mechanisms, right? So I did see them try. They emptied the tank against Forest, and we've come up short again. And look, there's only so many times you can keep doing this before it has an impact on enthusiasm, motivation, right? The mentality at the club. Arteta internally, I'm sure he would be furious at the circumstances. I guess a combination of things, right? The choices made last summer, perhaps he's you know, questioning where he chose to allocate the resources last summer. So look, you know, but publicly he has to keep it going. You see how many times he uses the words over my dead body. He has to keep them going. He has to continue to say that publicly and give that belief, and you know, to lift the mood and energy at the club. So because there's still so much to play for, right? Which brings me to the next point of the preview for PSV. So we're away there. It'll be Wednesday morning here in Australia. Lovely kickoff time for us. So Tuesday night, the club are probably going to travel tomorrow. I think they travel to Eindhoven and would get acclimatized. I think, look, in terms of selection, it's not really a matter of who do we play as much as what formation, like what changes can we implement? Because we most of the team picks itself, right? There are obviously a few key areas where you can, well, we've got some options, a left back being one, central midfield. It'll probably come down to Jorginho or Partey, and you know, up forward we can make a decision. Do we want to go with the 4-3-3 again, or do we want to look to do something different? For me, I think we have to do something different. I think the time has come. We are just too predictable. By now, many of you probably have seen or heard of Nuno's quote after the Forest match, and he wasn't even, look, there's nothing disparaging or disrespectful about this. You know, he was asked about how come he didn't play their usual back five, and he just said, look, we didn't need to because Arsenal don't have a striker. And he's absolutely right. I mean, everyone is watching what Arsenal is doing, right? It's just standard preparation for your opponent, right? They're all seeing our struggles. They're all seeing the predictability of us, that we can't unpick the lock. We get to that final third position, and we're looking for Odegaard to do something that he's just not doing at the moment. Like, he's not shooting. He's not finding that key part, that key pass, that drive, right? We have a few half chances. We look to Ethan. And since the Leicester match, what I really noticed is that, you know, a lot of people have sat up and taken notice of one area, and he's wonderful. He's absolutely wonderful footballer. He's only 17, right? So over time, he will continue to develop more strings to his bow, so to speak. Just like Saka went through when he broke through, right? He used to get double teamed, triple teamed, and the quality of the footballer will prevail in the end. You saw how well Saka has developed. He's got a number of strengths to him now. It's not just the predictable nature of coming in on his left. Like he's smashed goals in on his right. He can do a lot of different things now, right? So Ethan's time will come. For now, you've seen how much they flood that area. They double, triple team him. They know that our main outlet to goal really is through a wonderful cross that lands on Marino's head. And just it can be quite straightforward to negate. And teams are doing that, and PSV are looking at this as well. So for me, something needs to give. This is not going to be a whole Sterling thing, right? Because for those of you who listened before, I've said my piece on Sterling. There's nothing personal from me. It's emblematic of Arsenal's failures in the transfer window, right? So for me, I just don't even, in my head, when I'm doing my numbers and I'm doing my options and permutations and formations, he doesn't factor in for me, and I just don't think we can. So I would really revert to that back five option. I know Arteta is reluctant to do it, and you know, I admire Arteta. I'm not in that Arteta out camp, not whatsoever. I think he has his limitations that I would really, really like to see him address. He does sometimes he's just too fixated and wedded to an idea. He's It's been shown before when how reluctant he was when Saliba got injured a few years ago. He was so reluctant to bring in Kiwior. He went with Holding on a couple of matches. I know there's the whole thing about two left-footed centre-halves with him and Gabriel in. It was happening in front of our eyes. We really struggled. This is not a disparaging Rob Holding thing at all. That's not me. I'm not leaning into that. What I'm saying is we needed to change, and he was just reluctant to do it. He was wedded to his style, and it had to be that way or the highway. And I think a little bit has carried forward now. We seem very wedded to the 4-3-3. I think every time I watch Tierney get more and more minutes, I like what he brings. We've only got a few months left of him at the club, right? He's going to leave this summer. If it sounds like a formality. He gives us something different. He actually, on the left, he actually hugs the byline. He can whip in a fantastic cross. If we only, of course, do we have someone with the instincts and the finishing ability to be on the end of it? Well, that's a whole nother story. But we don't have much width on the left. You know, Trossard, whilst he starts as a left winger on the team sheet, he plays much more on the inside corridor, right? And he does his best to work within those channels. I like what Tierney brings. I like this idea of Tierney as a left wing back. You can have White on the right. He provides width on the overlap as well. That's when he's at his best, as he has proven over many years at Arsenal. And we can go with, you know, obviously Saliba and Gabriel as centre-halves. The third centre-half, you can have Timber, if you like. Calafiori, perhaps, depending on game state, of course. You know, he provides a whole different strength to it, a whole different dynamic to our attack. And then, look, I really like that idea. Then go with two up front. Can we get Wanyeri and Trossard closer together? Can we get Marino into the game stage, you know, late if we need to impact the match? Or can we start him as a midfielder and have almost like a 4-4-2 going, you know, with those two or three players working in closer tandem with each other, the width provided by Tierney or White? I just think we need to do something. This particular match, whilst of course it's enormous, right? I'm not trying to underplay this. It is huge for us because our only real chance of silverware now is in the Champions League, as unlikely as it is, given if we advance, which Madrid club is awaiting us, right? So we know how difficult it is, but you still got to do your best, and we got to try and salvage what we can, because if we spiral out of control this next few months, it's the impact could be. It could be quite severe in terms of players, you know, thinking, have I gone as far as I have with Arsenal? You know, I'm referring to Saliba and whatnot. And look, I don't want to speculate too much on that because maybe I'm being a bit sensationalist. So I'll just bring it back down to this match. The key is not to lose, right? I think our home form in Europe has proven to be absolutely exceptional. I don't believe anyone scored at the Emirates in Europe, and that's the bedrock of a strong European campaign. So I'm confident that if we bring a draw back to the Emirates, or if somehow if we can win, that'll be amazing, of course, to bring a lead back. I'm confident we can close this tie out in the second leg. Geez, I don't want to jinx anything, right? For listeners who listen to me before, I'm always touching wood, right? Because sometimes when I say things out loud, I don't want to be the one. I'm quite superstitious by nature. I don't want to be the one that sort of, you know, stuffs it all up for us down the track. So I'm confident that we can get the job done in the second leg, provided if we concede one or two, it's going to be a slog, right? It's going to be a slog in the second leg. I just don't see where the goals are going to come from. Of course, things can change very quickly, and quite often they do. However, right now, with how we're poised, I don't think we can afford to lose tomorrow, especially by more than one goal. So I think a score draw or a goalless draw, I think it suits Arsenal fine, especially if we can just, you know, if we can try something different and just unlock some other players, bring them into the fore, try and lean on our strengths, because we do have numbers and depth in certain positions. I haven't even mentioned Lewis Skelly yet, because of course he was suspended for Forest, but he will come back into contention. He's a natural midfielder, as wonderfully well as he's done as left back, right? Can we utilize his strengths in midfield, his instincts? You've seen Arteta finally do it with Zinchenko, right? So we do have players, different options. I'd love to see Jorginho given more minutes. For me, I'd prefer him over Partey. I think Arsenal and Partey, for a host of reasons, are going to be coming to a natural end this summer anyway, where the two parties will depart, pardon the pun. I'd like to see more of Jorginho because he will quite likely exit in the summer as well. You need his nous, his experience. This guy's a proven winner. He's got leadership. He's someone that you just need on the pitch, especially in moments like this, right? Like he knows how to win. I would like to see him given more opportunities. So we still have strength. We still have areas of strength in the squad. How can we extract that to what's the right word? I think offset's the best word. To try and offset some of our struggles up forward, can we bring more people into the picture? And I think a formation change does that. Will Arteta do it or not? Look, it remains to be seen, doesn't it? So just moving on elsewhere, just a rumour that emerged in the last few days with Joshua Kimmich from Bayern Munich. He's speaking of free transfers. I think his contract is winding down. It's anticipated he will leave on a free this summer. Arsenal were specifically mentioned as a club that has held talks with him. Look, I like this. I think it ties into the point I just made a minute ago that Partey and Jorginho are looking to exit this summer. That area of the pitch, we do need some renewal. We need some fresh injection there of quality. Zubimendi seems heavily linked with Arsenal. Again, nothing is done for me until I see them, you know, on Arsenal.com holding the shirt or unveiled on the YouTube channel, right? That's just my approach to these things, right? Nothing's done until it's done. I like this rumor. It remains to be seen, of course, how far it advances. But and again, I know the cynical side of me, of course, said it wouldn't be a transfer rumor without a fullback linked to Arsenal, right? And look, maybe that's a bit unfair because he's not just a defender, right? He's played significant minutes for club and country in midfield. And look, I like this option. I'm hoping Arsenal explore it. Again, proven winner, ready-made, has a ton of experience under his belt. I think he can add something very, very significant to Arsenal, especially in an area of the pitch that, you know, is going to have some change and turnover this summer. So I really like this. So on to the sporting director. Whilst there's been no official announcement as yet, what was really pleasing to see from the one and only David Ornstein a few days ago was that Arsenal are set to announce the next sporting director appointment in March. He referenced, of course, it's March now, so it's just a matter of does that mean end of the month or whatever. But the fact that it is front of mind, and that we did hear that it's going to be happening soon, that puts my mind at ease. You've probably heard me talk about how important it is that we get this position right, because we have seen the impact of one or two poor transfer windows, right, and how much has derailed our season. If we have another one, would that be too sensationalist again? I'm sorry to sound so doom and gloom, but if we get another one wrong, it is potentially project failure, right? It is potentially derailing of the entire Arteta project, because we've come so close now, 5 points off the title 2 years ago, 2 points off, and to be this close and come up short again, that's the kind of thing that can, let's just say it's not really a situation that too many of us want to contemplate, right? Because we are just so close to rewarding this era of the club with major, major trophies. And I still believe it will happen. Maybe we just need to just get one or two things correct behind the scenes. To get that little, that final push can sometimes be the most significant. It might seem little that, oh, we're so close now, we're back at the top of the table and et cetera, et cetera, but why can't we just get over the line? And sometimes it needs that expertise, it needs that measured thinking, the strong unity between manager, sporting director, board level, And that is the catalyst to get us over the line. So I'm hoping that whoever this appointment is, in fact, I'm confident that they're all aware of this, right? And the need to get this this position correct. What was interesting is the names that were linked. Look, I'm not going to profess to know too much about them all individually, but the gentleman, Andrea Berta, who is currently available, he's not at another club as we speak, unlike the likes of Olave, who has been very heavily linked with Arsenal. He's set to leave Sociedad this summer, right? So it's in terms of timing. You know, he's not available to actually hit the ground running in London until June this year. But Berta, who's had overseen some very significant periods and transactions in his time at Atletico, he's worked with Simeone, who, of course, when I guess if you zoom out a little bit and if you mention the word Atletico Madrid, the club, you quite likely associate that with Diego Simeone. Maybe conversely, when others or from the outside world, if they refer to Arsenal, they probably associate that with Mikel Arteta. Two very strong personalities, very much the face of the club. You don't often hear from any other representatives, right? You know, at ownership level CEOs are usually quiet. Vinay was just operating in the background. Edu now and then used to make the odd appearance, but that was very fleeting, right? Very strategic meetings, interviews. I meant to say very strategic interviews he used to give on a sporadic basis. So if you associate, I think there's a lot of legs to this rumor because he's also available, right? He'd be able to start imminently and start working on what is a huge summer for the club, not just in terms of incomings. We all know who we need. We've got some key contract renewals that need facilitating. We know who they are. Saliba's the standout. And of course, there's going to be some change turnover outgoings. We need to finalise some key transactions for the likes of Zinchenko and so on, and probably some others. So there's a lot to do. And whoever this appointment is needs the time to the runway to facilitate that to the best of their ability and the best interests of the club. So it's just as time goes on, I'm wondering if he is working his way up the rankings in terms of who the club will look to appoint. So it's interesting to see what happens on that one. I'm sure we'll find out in the coming weeks. So I know I've covered a number of topics already in this the length of time is getting on a bit. So I'm glad I'm hoping people are still listening. I'm glad that you've made it this far, because I actually really, really wanted to touch on something so, so important here in terms of, where things have gone wrong, where the fractures have gone wrong in the club the last few months. And this has come about from a wonderful question that was sent to me on Blue Sky. I'll just make mention of that actually. For the first time ever, I made a post yesterday evening in reference to recording today, and that were there any questions that anyone wanted me to cover? And look, I got to be honest, I was a bit scared to do that, because I mean, I actually also questioned, is anyone really finding these podcasts of value? Is anyone even going to respond or reach out? And thank you so much for the positivity I received from it. It really means a lot, right? Like I'm just an everyday dad over here in Melbourne, Australia, who loves the club, passionate about the club, and likes talking all things Arsenal. So that's where all of this is originated from. And I got a wonderful reception to that to that tweet. Thank you so much to Matt Orr, folks, who's been a supporter since the start, for retweeting. And this question is absolutely brilliant. I'll read it out word for word because I love the wording of this, and it's really helped in my head. It's helped me crystallize a lot of my thoughts that I've touched on in recent podcasts about Arsenal's transfer activity. So the question is from Arsenal Unfiltered on Blue Sky, and they have written, "Do you have a degree of sympathy for the club/board? They took a risk and have since been made to look very silly. A bit of better luck in February and we might be hailing them if we can spend big in the summer." And yeah, look, absolutely. I was nodding my head as I read this question. Thank you so much, firstly, for commenting and for posting that. And it's really helped me to understand, just to help process my own thoughts on this, because in my head, something was just not quite right. Yeah, clearly, we all know that. Something has gone amiss. And the way this question was worded, especially in reference to the board level in terms of their participation in this, it really helped me figure out the missing piece in my head. So look, full disclaimer, clearly I'm not an ITK. I'm not in the know. I don't have all the answers. I'm all the way over here in Melbourne, Australia, right? So I'm a fan like all of us, but for me, I'm drawn upon my own experience in the corporate world. For those who may not have heard, I spent many years in a major bank here in Melbourne as a senior manager, and I know firsthand the importance of alignment between key executives, right, and how critical, how much a key transaction is predicated on all people being on the same page. And the Arsenal board level question, yeah, it really got me thinking, because Arsenal actually have, and I believe this has been designed on purpose, right? Arsenal have a board that is effectively made up of lawyers, right? Tim Lewis being the most significant factor in all of that. So Tim Lewis, just before I go to answer the specific question, and please bear with me, because I'm most certainly going somewhere with this. It is important to recap why Arsenal's board is currently structured the way it is. Now, of course, we know the Cronkies, KSE, took full ownership of the club some years ago. And of course, Stan Kroenke is the outright owner, the ultimate decision maker of the club. He of course, resides in the US. We all know this, right? We all know that the KSE model, they own multiple clubs, key franchises in major sports, especially in the US. So, and of course, there was a major stadium, the SoFi Stadium, that entire development, that entire project, right? That was really, it seemed to be Stan's main focus over the last few years in overseeing and facilitating that. So with that in mind, look, I'm not covering anything groundbreaking here, of course, because we know, for all intents and purposes, Josh is kind of the face of the ownership now, Josh Kroenke. He's been very active, much more active than we've seen Stan be, right, in the last few years, especially from the Amazon documentary, of course. He had the nice slick suits and the slick back hair, right? So for all intents and purposes, it's Josh Kroenke who represents the family. That's not to say Stan doesn't have any involvement. I don't think the way, especially at this level, at this ownership sort of level, is that when a decision is made, of course it needs to be sanctioned by the ultimate owner, right? However, he or she would heavily lean upon the advice and recommendation of their board members, who were put in place strategically, intentionally, to oversee the fine details, the key, you know, day-to-day runnings, operations of the club. And when for example, when a player is put in front of the board and needs his rubber stamp to approve it, he's not going to be across. Let's say Calafiori, for example, his signing last summer. He's not going to be across the key profiles, the key scouting data, his injury history, the price, the payment structure. You know, that's not really in his remit. Of course, he's going to be made aware of that in a summary, but it doesn't get to him for his signing off, for his rubber stamping, unless the key people around him, the likes of Tim Lewis, Josh, Richard Garlick, right, unless they've all sanctioned it, unless they've all said, yep, we've seen all the data, we've seen the pros and cons, and here is our recommendation, and he would quite likely go along with that. So that's usually the way it works at this sort of level. Now, where I'm going with this is, do we all remember Nicolas Pepe? I'm sure we all do, right? You might be wondering, why do I even reference him? Why do I bring him up now? Because what we see now, in terms of the current structure, the current, the executive function, the decision-making of the club, I believe much of this originates with what we have to say was a debacle of a signing. And this is, again, I don't go personal at players here. That's just not my vibe, right? This is nothing to do with Pepe himself, right? He was just clearly the wrong profile, the wrong player purchased at the wrong amount. And when I say wrong player purchased, I mean I have to extend some sympathy and empathy here, speaking of those words, to Emery, because Emery didn't want him. Emery, all summer, he had courted, he wanted Zaha. He wanted to redesign the team based on a right-footed attacker coming in off the left wing, right? He wanted Zaha for a very similar price point, I must say. Premier League proven, Zaha was much younger then, right? He was Palace's key man. Like he was the signing Emery wanted. For whatever reasons, and I know it gets a bit murky here because there's some legalities and probably some NDAs that were signed, right, and in Rahul Sanlehi's exit, right? For whatever reason, right, that transaction, the Pepe transaction, it cost the position of Rahul Sanlehi at the time, who, again, probably should never have been there. And that goes back to speak of the breakdown at board function, like why are we even in this position where we've got such misalignment between the coach and the individual signing players? Because the coach wanted Zaha, right-footed, plays off the left. He was given Pepe, left-footed, plays off the right. And it's just basically saying, here you go, here's a club record signing, now make it work. And make it work along with the two previous club record signings, Aubameyang and Lacazette. We had a very misfunctioning, disjointed decision-making process, invested heavily in the forward areas of the pitch and basically told, now make it work. Now, I'm not saying this was the sole reason for Emery's struggles at Arsenal. That whole topic has been done to death as well, right? So I'm not going to go into that. What I'm trying to say is, I'm trying to keep this centered on how we've got to the current structure and decision-making we see at Arsenal. And I think that whole transaction, that whole debacle, watching Pepe struggle for many years, unfortunately. And because of how much we'd already spent in the forward department, we were basically stuck for a number of years, right, to effectively make that forward line work. And to the point where we were paying players to leave. We were cancelling contracts. Players were running down their contracts, not even getting into the matchday squads, right? We all know that era of Arsenal where it seems so long ago, doesn't it? But it was only just a few years ago where we had the likes of players on very hefty wages. We had Ozil, Socrates, Mustafi, I believe. You know, they weren't even registered. They weren't even getting in matchday squads. Kolasinac, another one. We were basically either waiting for them to go or had to pay them to go. Now, all of this is related because clearly there had been a misuse, a mismanagement of Arsenal's finite resources. KSC have taken over, and they've seen that they under their watch, right? They've seen firsthand how Arsenal have wasted money, across the board here. So I think what's happened is, along with exiting Sanlehi at the time, and then making the structural changes we did, putting in Vinay. Edu took over as the technical director back then. I think from KSC's point of view, they were of the view that, you know what, we get it. We get why we need to exit these players, and we will sanction that, Mikel. We will sanction that, Edu, pay them off to leave. However, never again. We are not going to tolerate this again. And that's why they put in place Tim Lewis. So he's a lifelong fan of the club, of course. He's a very successful, very esteemed lawyer by trade. I believe Richard Garlick as well is a lawyer. So they were put in place for this reason. Because lawyers, and this is not to generalize, however, lawyers by nature are a bit more risk averse. They're much more considered. They're not reactionary. They will absorb and seek as much information as possible, right, for their own internal risk assessment. They will look at the pros and cons. They will challenge you. They will go back to you with certain risks that you may not have thought about and ask you to mitigate them, right? How are you going to address this point or this point or this scenario? That is by nature how they operate. And I know this from experience too, right? Because I used to think I had all my bases covered, right? We're putting forward a term sheet or a deal sheet for a transaction to our lawyers, our advisors, or to my credit executives, right? To say, yep, this is a goer, this is a done thing. You know, when can I get final approval, and then I can go and ring them today and say, yep, it's approved, and let's all get this finalized. It doesn't work that way, right? It just doesn't. Especially sometimes the bigger the institution and the more money involved, the more layers of protection there is, because the club cannot afford to keep getting transactions wrong, such as that era I've mentioned a number of times with Pepe and the other forwards. We cannot allow that. So in doing so, I'm bringing this right back down to the question now, empathy and sympathy at board level. I think what's happened is there's been a clear edict from the board over the last few years along the lines of, okay, Mikel, okay, Edu, we understand why we need to exit some of these players who are, I guess, at different stages of their careers. They're on big, big money. We've given them the big contract extensions. They're not even contributing on the field anymore, right? We need to exit them. We don't like having to, you know, cut them a check and pay them out of the contracts and get no resale value from them. But we'll do it because you've put forward a proposal to ensure this doesn't happen again. We are going to invest heavily on the players of a younger age bracket, the under 23s, etc. And we all saw that summer, that very significant summer, where it signaled a change in direction for Arsenal. We signed a host of players under that profile, and we were prepared to pay the premiums that came with it to sign the likes of English players, Premier League proven, $50 million for Ben White, for example. We got Ramsdale. We got the likes of Tomiyasu, relatively cheap. Odegaard, of course, who's proven to be a bargain, really, for notwithstanding his struggles the last few months, right? But the Odegaard transaction is an absolute overwhelming success, right? It really is. There's no other way to put that. So the point I'm referencing here is that in justifying to the board why we are pivoting this way and exiting these players and paying them off, we are investing heavily into these players. And in turn, that's going to see us not only have, well, obviously the basics are a cohesive team unit, right? You can't tell me any team succeeds on the pitch with such fractures behind the scenes, players training by themselves and all the cliques and dressing room leaks. Like, that's absolutely toxic, right? So that's the most obvious. When you bring together a younger group of players, the camaraderie, the enthusiasm, the motivation, completely different, right? And the fans buy in because you see yourselves in that, especially with Haaland talent, Smith Rowe, Nketiah, Saka, Nelson, right? They were all heavily involved in that early stage of the Arsenal rebuild, if you want to refer to it as that. So everyone was on board, and the trajectory has been phenomenal since. We've returned to Champions League. Our revenues are through the roof, right? The numbers the club published a few weeks ago, it's outstanding, the performance of the club, right? We are so well positioned. And it looks like, well, again, touch wood, that we are here to stay for the next little bit in terms of the trophy conversations, Champions League and the Premier League. So that's all been justified. That's all been proven. And I believe that in terms of what promises Arteta and Edu delivered to the board at that time, I believe they've delivered them in terms of Arsenal's rebuild. Sure, we've stopped short of winning the title, and now we're so close now, right? So you can't just abandon everything. You can't just pack it up and go home and start again. That's not what should happen, I don't get the sense that's what's going to happen at all. However, I'm bringing it back down now to the question about sympathy for board level. So last summer, we finished 2 points off Manchester City. And we've seen how close Mikel is with the ownership, right? That's very obvious. And I believe there's a number of times in the year when all the schedules allow that Arteta flies over to the US. You sometimes see him pictured in various corporate boxes with the owners, right? But there's a 1 or 2 day conference or summit, whatever you want to call it, right? Where key representatives from Arsenal, I'm sure Vinay has been there, Edu's been there before, Richard Garlick probably most recently, Tim Lewis would be there, Arteta himself, and they would all converse, right? Like, you know, where are we placed? What do we want to do? You know, what are you thinking, Mikkel? You know, present to us what your plans are. Let's strategize. And in terms of addressing the question, how can we now overcome this very narrow two-point margin? What's going to get us over the line, Mikkel? He would have presented to them his plans for the likes of the profile of Mikkel Merino in midfield, the profile of Calafiori. Now, I don't believe that was received as well as, it wasn't as, clearly to me, it wasn't as unanimous as it quite often is, right? As it has been over the last few years. And to me, that was evident with how long those transactions took. Sure, there's always reasons why transactions take time. You know, negotiations stall sometimes. Everyone wants a clip, right? Commission, agents, representatives, you know, the way a payment's structured. Sure, there's always reasons. There was Euros last year, of course, too, right? So there's a number of reasons. However, there was enough noise around Merino and Calafiori. You know, there was enough noise about that to suggest that he was having a hard time convincing the powers that be, including Edu, that this is the right profile to make. And I think what's happened is, at board level, something, look, I'm just using layman's terms here, right? Just something along the lines of, at board level, they've gone, really? Another fullback, Mikkel? Are you serious? Another one? Another left back? And in doing so, they've gone back to him to say, look, we will support this, however, and here's the key, however, you need to make space in the squad. There are so many players that we've seen just frozen out over time by Arteta, and their transfer values tank. And, you know, we've been notoriously bad sellers, something the club has been trying to address. And I actually think we've done really well with the value we extracted for the likes of Balogun in recent years and Kedira, Smith Rowe, right? So I actually think that's something Edu did quite well in what was his final window at the club. So, but anyway, the point I'm getting at is here, clearly things weren't as aligned. And they've gone back to him and said, you must exit some players. You know, we've got to sell to buy. And I don't think Edu was on board for the type of players that Arteta was signing either. We know we tried hard with Šeško, and that's been covered as well, right? Why that didn't happen. And I believe we'll go back in hard for him, hopefully early this summer window. But we clearly had a fracture between the two, right? And that was evident in the way this goalkeeper search for Juan Garcia ended up. Like, it was just bizarre. 30 million euro release clause for a second choice goalkeeper. I think people will look around and go, like, well, what are you doing, Mikkel? Like, well, how many more? This is on top of when we finalized the 30 million for David Raya, right? Which I'm not questioning, of course. He's a world-class goalkeeper. That conversation is done and dusted now. I'm not even revisiting that. It was brilliant, and he is brilliant. What I'm saying is, then on top of that, how much turnover we've seen in goalkeepers, fullbacks, and now a second goalkeeper for that price when we've neglected the attack. And the very fact that then at the last minute, we've seen Edu basically pull the pin on that. He was the one, from all reports, who made the phone call to Neto, his compatriot, right? They're Brazilian, right? And he's the one who's signed him on a loan deal. And he's basically put the kibosh on anything else. Now, that was really bizarre, because from everything I've heard so far, right, it's always Mikkel on the phone. When he wants a player, he sells them their vision. He will talk to them and he will scout them first. Like, he will he'll court them first. That's the word I'm looking for. So the fact that Edu took over, pulled the pin on this one, did himself, there's enough rumors and rumblings around this to suggest that things were just not, they were not okay. And I believe that's been proven, because 2 months later, you know, Edu's tendered his resignation. I actually think, you know, as much as Arsenal tried to increase his wages and they promoted him before to the sporting director, right? Clearly his ambitions were, well, he's joining that multi-club model now. So I think he had sort of eyesight on something of that ilk, or a CEO type level, which you know, wasn't possible at Arsenal. But I think the board have, I think they've pushed back for the first time in a while. They've pushed back hard on Arteta and Edu. And I don't think Edu and Arteta were aligned on these choices. And look, as it turns out, This is, again, not to disparage Calafiori or Mourinho. I see their strengths and I can see the logic in acquiring them. However, the fact that they were our only signings, that's the issue. It shouldn't have been one or the other, right? We needed an attacker. We needed that for Edu to admit that we didn't have any intention of signing Sterling on a loan, right? Like that's telling for me. Like that's utterly bizarre. It shouldn't have happened. And for us to only end up with a panic loan of Sterling, who unfortunately is just a non-factor at the moment. Calafiori and Mourinho, yes, they've been unlucky with injuries. However, you know, we had such gaping holes in the squad that weren't addressed. And understandably now there are questions when you look back on and you think, well, if we only had such finite resources, why did we spend combined 70, 80 million on a left back and a central midfielder when we could have put that towards an attacker? And I understand that. I wish I had a good answer for that. Unfortunately, it's what's happened. So yes, look, to bring it down to the question, yes, I do have some sympathy, empathy for the board, because I believe if my theory is correct, right, I at least think they've been consistent. They have conveyed that message to Arteta and Jason Ato and all others involved that this is what we are seeking, right? If you can provide the right battle plan to address what they've been tasked with, they will sanction a move. Now, January was an utter colossal failure, right? Even if we still had Martinelli and Havertz fit, I just think it was such a poor decision to assume that they're going to be able to do this at this level with this volume of minutes for the next 3 to 4 months. It was just a poor, poor decision. So the logic behind it, unfortunately, we're just not going to know until the summer, because I think the best case scenario for all parties here is to come out with their reputations a little bit enhanced, is that once the summer window opens, what I'm hoping to see is that we get the likes of Zubimendi, we get the likes of Šeško done nice and early, because in finalizing those deals, what will quite likely happen, if so, is that we will probably hear things about how much groundwork has been put in previous months, how much groundwork, how far advanced negotiations are with all parties, their representatives, the clubs, etc., referencing January as well, referencing how close we work together in this time. And I think that gives a sense of justification, that if it wasn't going to happen now, look, at least we put in all stops now. We did as much as we could to then facilitate a nice, easy, quick transaction to finalize in the summer. And maybe then we can have a bit of, we can look at this scenario and the board's involvement. We can look at that with a bit more positivity, because if we don't, right, if we don't address those failures, like I said, the ramifications are huge. So look, I appreciate this is getting quite long now, this podcast, my longest one yet, so I'll wrap it up there. I do hope I covered that question adequately. Please do let me know if there's anything else you'd like me to talk about and cover. Thank you so much for anyone who's made it this far and listened this far. If you're listening on a podcast app, I would very much welcome a review, please, if you'd be so kind. It really does help in the search listings. Or like and subscribe, comment on YouTube. That would be most, most appreciated from my point of view. And just look, again, thank you to everyone who continues to support the podcast and just sends nice messages of feedback. It really does mean a lot. I'm really enjoying doing this, and thank you so much for listening. For now, wherever you are in the world, have a wonderful day or end to your weekend, and I'll talk to you on the next one. Thank you so much, and come on, Arsenal.